Candid is a podcast of Tennessee Voices about mental health, featuring stories of people who have overcome mental health challenges, as well as those who have helped people overcome mental health challenges. This podcast is about authenticity, and it's intended to give a voice to those who are passionate about mental well-being. We hope that by sharing stories, listeners understand mental health and just how important it is in our day-to-day lives, and they will help us reduce stigma. We want you to know that so many who have struggled with mental health can and did overcome their challenges. And if you are struggling, you can too. I'm your host, Ricky Harris, CEO of Tennessee Voices. And with me is my favorite co-host, Will Voss, COO of Tennessee Voices. Welcome to our podcast. Let's get candid.
Thank you to our Candid sponsors who made this episode possible. The Omni Family of Services is a multi-state human services agency serving adults and children. Through a trauma-competent lens, they provide a continuum of care, including foster care, family preservation, behavioral health, and primary care services, focused on helping kids, families, and the communities they live in strong and healthy. To learn more about the Omni Family of Services or to contact an office near you, there's a link provided in this podcast description, along with the contact email if you or your business would like to sponsor an episode of Candid.
All right, welcome to this episode of the Candid podcast. You're here because we want to get candid. I'm here with my co-host,
Will Voss. Hello, hello.
And we have, I think, a really good treat. I'm so excited about this interview with Steve Johnson today. So why don't we just open it up and let you just tell us what you do, where you are in life, what's going on with you, and then we'll dive into some questions.
All right. Well, been fortunate, blessed to be married to my wife, Glenn, for 31 years. I've got two girls, one that's a sophomore at Auburn. And we're having a blast because she's a tiger paw. So she get to go down there and see that lot of things. And then we have a daughter that just graduated from Lipscomb University. And she works at a
Bison.
And she works in Brentwood at a daycare place at Brentwood Baptist Church. I'm sorry, Brentwood Methodist Church. And, you know, my hobby, I've been really fortunate the last 11 years. I'm very involved with the Bordeaux Eagles inner city football team that it's my passion. I had all girls, so I had to coach football to keep my masculinity going.
I love it. So
that's kind of my hobbies and where I'm at.
I heard a little bit about that that basketball team. We're going to dive into kind of a little bit about that in a minute. But we've got a Lipscomb grad over here.
Nice. Yes, I know you're a proud father.
Yeah. It's a lot of fun.
What a great school. And we have lots of mutual connections to this organization. As we were just describing before the podcast, we now mapped all the people we know in our circle. And it's a lot.
It is
crazy how small the world is. Anyway, would love to know a little bit about your journey. I'm learning a little bit about your job, which is really fascinating. But the basketball team.
I know why you're saying, because I did do basketball also. So you want a little bit about that?
How'd you get into that? What's that about? I know you've made the joke about sports, but it seems like what I understand is deeper with.
You know, I was so fortunate. When I was little, it was the first time that the integration of sports. So my little league team was when I was 9 years old, two young boys from the inner city also. And their name was Fruit Bell and Terry Ewing. And they just basically lived with us. And we had a blast. And I played with both of them from I was 9 to I was 19. Well, then we kind of broke apart. I was working at National Wire. And here comes Terry Ewing back into my life. And he had been about 12 years. And they said, hey, I said, man, I'd love you to come to work for us while you're looking for a job. So he did. And then 2 days later, he said, hey, I just found a football team. Would you help me with the quarterbacks and the offense for a couple of days? And that's been 11 years. And it's literally just right down the street in the Bordeaux area and next to where our office is. Mm-hmm. And it's just kind of been a big passion of mine and my family's, and actually it's helped me so much in what we'll talk about today about anxiety, because it's all about when you help someone else, it helps you take your focus off yourself.
Absolutely.
And it's just been, it's by far been the biggest blessing to myself and my family.
Mm. Well, there's a self-care tip number one. Volunteer work will help you kind of reset your priorities, regain some vision. And
for sure.
Yeah, that's cool. Okay, so you said it already, but you kind of told me this before we started too. You're in leadership position. You've kind of taken this path with Nashville Wire that you didn't expect to go as far and as good as it's gone. And it served you in some really specific ways. And you talked about your mental health already. Uh-huh. So being that this is a mental health talk, go ahead and dive in with us. Where did that begin for you? And what's the journey been like?
Okay. So it's really interesting. You know, sometimes this will be the biggest blessing that I'll show you with that, but it kind of turned into something that caused my anxiety and my depression. Wouldn't change anything in the past. But so I have two older sisters that are 12 years older, 10 years older, and then an awesome mom that today is the one university. She went to heaven. She's a great woman, lived to be 89. But so I had three moms.
Oh my goodness.
So every time that I tried to, it's something almost kind of like that when I was starting to fall, they'd throw a pill underneath me. Mm-hmm. And, you know, soften blows. So my wife will tell you that's kind of the worst thing ever happened to her is that I had three moms.
Oh, my goodness.
But with that, I probably in meeting with some professionals, I didn't learn how to fail growing up, because I was blessed to have three moms to keep me from failing. So then as I got into my personal life, I realized I had the fear of failure because I had never failed. And so it was really a tough situation to dive into. And I just didn't want to let other people down. And very blessed. I'll tell you one thing to go into it. You know, the toughest years were probably anywhere from 15 to 20 years ago, when I was really the toughest times. And you could not give me $1 million versus going through that. Mm. But I wouldn't give you a dime to go through it again. So I'm so glad I went through it.
Yeah.
And I learned so much. And my Christian walk is so much. But what I'm blessed with is it has enabled me to identify other people that are going through anxiety, and which turns into depression. Mm-hmm. So that's kind of what started me.
Yeah.
I know.
How so much can you relate? Go ahead. Yeah. Go ahead.
Yeah, I mean, I think about, you know, one, loss of a parent. You know, we're getting ready to mark, time is going faster than I had ever expected. I think it's 4 years for my father this year.
Okay.
And I think about my mother and my grandmother and my sister and my older cousins. I'm the official youngest baby, grandson, the son of, you know, the only boy. And I think about all those pillows that were there. Mm-hmm. And one of the things that just stuck with me and what you said is that, you know, going through that experience, you know, it had to happen. And I tell people often, you grow through what you go through.
Mm-hmm. I love that.
You grow through what you go through. And having that background, you know, I know for me as a Christian, it's like, all right, I went through all this, but I wasn't alone.
Right.
Mm-hmm. You know, keeping the faith along the way and learning these lessons. And you mentioned earlier, as far as pouring into others. That's something we've talked to staff about. You know, how are we helping others? You know, it's just a part of self-care, volunteerism. And there's a lot that can be done. And there's a lot that we can take in as we are going through things. So,
Well, I was thinking about your story too as he was talking. I also keep thinking about, I mean, fear of failure is very common among people. There's so many people who struggle with that. You mentioned that you're a Christian, and I think in the Christian faith, it's also a struggle because there's this expectation that you never, you know, do anything wrong. Oh, everyone's looking at you as an example. How has that part of your journey played into this, helped and been difficult?
You know, by far, it's what I grew my faith during those times just went, thank goodness, skyrocketed. That, again, that's why I say you can give me $1 million versus going through that. At the same time, it's enabled me to identify with some other folks I can kind of pick up. Mm-hmm. And I love to hear the things that would help you go through. And I finally figured out that fear through a preacher doing a broadcast. Mm-hmm. It stands for false evaluations appearing real.
Oh, I love that.
Well, it's interesting you say you write that down, because this is the other thing about going through this. So I just brought by this year's book. Let me start with this to say, there's a trick question out there. The question is, what's the best exercise to lose weight? Mm. And people say swimming. Well, the answer is, it's the one that you'll do and one you love. So when I share what this is what works for me. Mm. So about 18 years ago, I started just writing stuff down in books like this one says, hate has four letters, but so does love. Enemies has seven letters, but so does friends. I just happened to put it on this. So I put things like this in this book. So I have now 14 of these books. Oh my gosh, wait. And I just put things down, whether I've heard it during a sermon yesterday or like what you just said, I got to write that down. Uh-huh. I just listened on the way here of something from Alan Jackson, you know, from Murfreesboro. I was like, oh, I got to write that down. Mm-hmm. And so that's what works for me, is to have a book to write things down. Because what really helped me in my Christian walk is because I write those things down. Mm-hmm. From my helping others and anxiety and depression, you know, both of you are way too young, but in 08, 09, we had a pretty major recession.
Yes.
Well, we had, we've got three plants that I worked for, and I'm in charge of bringing the work in. Well, we laid these guys off, and they worked paycheck to paycheck. And it literally, I would fake it till I made it on the way to work. I would get there, and all day long, man, I was Mr. Energized, but I'd get in my car, and I'd literally cry for the 30-minute commute. Because I just couldn't, I felt so much pressure that I'm not bringing enough work. And so we're laying these people off in the plant.
Yeah.
So now I get to go back because, you know, times right now and the COVID and just so much going on. There's a lot of things going on, but I go back and I open them up and go, oh, this is what happened in 08. It's nothing compared to now.
That's right.
So that's what helps me. So to answer your question, it's what I went through gave me more tools to grow my faith, to help others, but to also focus on the positives.
Mm-hmm.
So that was really my tool.
Mm-hmm. And do you find that like talking about your experience with anxiety and depression draws people to you that need to hear from you? Like
they do.
Yeah.
I'm so glad you asked that question. So here's the perfect thing. So when I was going through this, again, this was the worst part was probably 07 to about 09 or 11. If I was an alcoholic, I could go to AA. If I had any addiction, there was a group for it. But there wasn't one for anxiety. Mm. There wasn't one for depression, a group. And that's why I call myself a recovering depressionic, you know, versus the alcohol. It's not a word. You know, don't Google that. That will come up. But it is, that's what I couldn't find that there. So it's interesting you asked that question, because what helps me the most, AAs get together and they talk to each other. But you want to know you're not the only one going through it. So what my secret sauce for me being able to conquer my what I call my thorn in my side is to help others with that. So I just spread the word, say, if you know anybody that's going through anxiety or depression, can I hear that? So I love to be drawn to them, because that's the best way for me to get through mine, is to talk with someone that maybe is going through it.
Yeah.
At the time.
Yeah. Yeah. I think that's important.
Oh, yeah. I think about the work we do here. You know, we talk a lot about lived experience and being able to share your story, the power of a story. Mm-hmm. And I'll tell you, by coming on this podcast, you are helping someone. Mm-hmm. As men, we don't talk about how we feel. It's so much stigma surrounded about mental health. And, well, you know, you got to fake it till you make it. I heard you mention it earlier. And we try to encourage people to know that it's okay to not be okay. And by sharing your story, you're helping someone else who may have some tips and tools that you can take away, that you can learn from.
Every time.
You know, you pulled out this journal for those who are listening. And I think often I was a big journaler. Poetry is my biggest thing.
Okay.
That's how I get things out. And I tell people now, we've got the world at our fingertips with our phones.
You know,
you don't have a notepad, you don't have a pen, you can at least type it in somewhere. Get those thoughts down on paper and be able to look back on it and say, wow, I'm in a different place today than I was when I wrote this.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
It was powerful yeah. tools.
I have two thoughts, like two directions. I think they kind of come together, but I'm trying to figure out which way I want to go to simplify. But one of the things y'all are talking about right now, I think just to stay on that, is your experience as men talking about your feelings. I don't have that experience because I'm not a man. So I want to hear kind of from your perspective. I'm hearing a lot in the news or a lot of, you know, opinion, op-ed, people talking on the radio, and literally just recently heard something on the radio from a DJ. People are talking about what happens when, you know, we get men to start talking about their feelings. What happens to our dependence on men to be these brave people to go be in our military or to go be part of the police force? Obviously, I definitely support women in those roles as well. But right now you're both men, so we're talking about this from a man's perspective. But what does that look like? How do you both hold bravery and courage to do maybe some hard things and at the same time hold vulnerability to talk about your feelings? Can they both exist at the same time? Do they have to be separate things?
I personally don't think so. I can, looking back, I'm a little ashamed of the time that I wasn't transparent. Not a little, I'm very. You know, I was something I really wasn't. The fact that I enjoy it and I really feel like it helps other, usually younger men, but I've met with older men. It's just really a tool that is, I think each man needs to be able to put in their toolbox to be vulnerable and know that it's okay. I'm going to write that in my book. It's okay not to be okay. I love that saying. It is me, but I've never heard it put that way. So to answer your question, I really feel like, Ricky, that that is the key from a man to be transparent and not be fake. In every area.
Yeah.
I'll tell you, you know, for me, it's holding it to the same high regard. I was going back to a conversation I recently had with my nephew, 10-year-old, letting him know that, hey, you got to let me know when things are not okay. When you can't express how you feel, it's okay to say, I don't know. Let's start pinpointing where the issues are coming from. And the same fist pump that I give him when he's walking across fifth grade graduation, receiving his award, I give him that same fist pump when he's letting me know how he's feeling. Mm-hmm. You know, the same fist pump that we get when I renovated my closet. I was so proud. Like, yeah, I did this. I want that same fist pump and that appreciation when I say I'm not having the best of days. So if we can carry those two in the same weight and not put more on the other, I think there's room for both to exist in the same arena. Rick, you know, you mentioned we can be vulnerable and also lead, show bravery in the same manner. And I think that's for anyone.
Yeah. Wow. I think that's a great lead into my other question about leadership. So the football team.
Okay.
So 11 years now, was supposed to be a couple of days.
Right.
Why? Why did you stay with it? And where are you now?
Okay, well, this may be a longer podcast because this is my passion, and it has been. So let me start off with this one. You'll see on here. So everything we do there's no secret. Okay, everything. So I was telling you about my friend Terry Ewing. So this is our team slogan, our logo, everything that we want every kid to learn. But it goes like this. It says, there's no secret what God can do. What he does for the Eagles, what he does for the Eagles, he can do for you. I don't need no gang. I don't need no revolver. All I need is my Heavenly Father. Once was lost, now I'm found. Pick me up when I fall down. Once was blind, now I see. God's been good. Great to me. Every time I think about all the good God's done for me, all I say is, ooh-wee, ooh-wee. So
I love it.
Now you know why I have passion.
Uh-huh.
Well, Terry wrote that. And it is just, we have young boys from the age 7 to age 13. And it is just amazing to see. Our biggest goal is for a kid to be bummed the season's over with. Mm. So I coached for about 5 or 6 years. Now I'm kind of in the leadership side of it and love to film the boys so they can see it on themselves on YouTube. And it is just it's just the best way for me to give back. Mm-hmm. And it's just, God put me in a great place in Bordeaux for my work. And our practice field is five minutes away. You've probably heard of Solomon Builders.
Yeah.
They have Ty Osmond. Did you know Ty Osmond's story?
Yeah.
So, okay, well, Solomon Builders, I knew Ty forever. And for 27 years, and he owned Solomon Builders. And our building was kind of falling down, and it's in Metro Center. And we go play Brentwood Blaze and all those places. I had these really nice places. And so Ty came to me and said, hey, we want to give back. What can we do? I said, the tower building's falling down a little bit. Could you maybe put an extra roof here? And, you know, can we have this or that? He goes, man, this is what Solomon's going to do. This is on a Thursday. A week and 2 days later, Ty died in the Duck River.
No way.
He drowned. Just tragic. Well, there, Solomon Builders and all of his people that helped subcontractors. Now, we are the building. You wouldn't believe what they did for us. So we have the sign up there. Up there's no secret. And so we make it's bigger than football.
Wow.
That's our slogan. And idle time is dangerous time. So we just really try to do as much as we can to make football. Yes, we love wins, but it's so much bigger than football. So
yeah.
I think you asked me what time it was, and I told you how to build a watch.
No. That was good. Are you guys attached to a school or is it independent?
No, it's a little. So we play the Brentwood Blaze and we play the Mount Juliet Bears. And it's a little league football program. And so we play our home games on Metro Center Fields.
Okay.
And then we practice at Hartman Park.
Mm-hmm.
And that's why we're really for this daylight saving time, not to end, because at the end of the season, we're out with car lights trying to practice.
Yeah.
But so it's just an organization. And it's during football season, but we got such a huge coaching staff that like even started in April. On Sundays and Wednesday nights, we do just a little bitty training.
Mm-hmm.
And again, it's just to keep the boys active. Because idle time in these times are dangerous times.
Yeah.
And to give them, not all were blessed with a father.
Mm-hmm.
You were saying you lost your father four years ago. A lot of these young men don't have fathers in their lives. So it's to give them, let them know they don't care how much you know until they know how much you care.
Mm-hmm.
So you're not going to go out there and make a difference at first. That's where I'm blessed to be there 11 years is I'm confident they know how much I care now.
Yeah.
That they didn't know the first 3 to 4 years. Yeah.
So you're seeing some of these kids grow up. I mean, what are the ages you said they can start?
So they start at 7. So my biggest, when I first was with Terry, we had 4 or 5 years that were absolutely, we were all in. I mean, I was so blessed with a wife and daughter, but, you know, I didn't miss practices. I got an old van that took out seats and say, get in where you fit in.
Oh my gosh.
And we were darn, I'll be honest with you. 1 year, if we got beat, it'd been 100% coaching because we had great.
Wow.
We'll be right back after this short break. TN Voices is now hiring qualified applicants to fill positions all across the state. You can be part of a growing team that puts the mental health of Tennesseans first and thrive in a compassionate work environment. To apply to join our team, log on to tnvoices.org/employment. Welcome back.
So we just really, and so we kind of made the turn. Those boys were 13 and 14. Now, they're 23 and 24 and some great stories and some sad stories. But one we call him JoJo. Everybody has a nickname because that's just Terry. Coach Terry just, and then, so this kid was from Joe Johnson. And so he said, you're Joe Johnson's father. So he's JoJo.
Nice.
And then the next kid comes out there and he's just huge. He's the Biggie. And so those boys, who Terry and I became the closest. And then on the side part of it, there was a young man named Mike Mitchell. And the year after he played for me, he got cancer, rhabdomyosarcoma. And he was supposed to live for about 3 to 4 months. And he lived 5 years.
Whoa.
And he is the most amazing story you'd ever want to know. 30 for 30 people did a video. I'll give you that. It's fightlikemike.tv. We've had over 100,000 views. But Mike became a son to my family through that whole time. Mm. And when you see in that movie, Mike says, surround yourself with good people, focus on the positives, because the negatives just bring you down. And then he says, set your goals really high. Mm. If people don't laugh at your goals, they're not high enough. Mm. So honestly, I mean, this podcast, I hope, helps one or two people. Mm. Mike's movie would help thousands. Mm. I can't tell you how many people I've sent it and said, watch this with your son. Because that 9-minute movie, and the last thing Mike says when he walks out in the out of this tunnel that we found, well, it was Vanderbilt Stadium, so we did a lot of video. He said, my goal in life is for people to talk about me. And then he goes, talk about me for a long time, but for the right reason. Because Mike said, Coach Steve, please don't ever tell anybody I have cancer. I want them to like or love me because I have cancer.
Yeah.
I want them to like or love me because I have my, because I'm Mike Mitchell.
Yeah.
And his stories, again, a whole nother podcast that he met Julio Jones. I mean, that was strictly a God story. Our youth minister wrote somebody, and John T knew somebody.
Of course.
Jim knew somebody, and Joe knew somebody. And the next thing I know, John T says, hey, you got to call this. And we're there with the agent, and we go to this game, and Julio comes up to Mike and goes, come on, jump in, Mike, and jump in this car. And Mike goes, Julio, I have 100 things to ask you, and I can't think of one right now. So, again, that's a long story of why I love the Board of Eagles.
We will definitely link that story in our podcast and share it. Yeah, we'll make sure we have all that. Man.
I know. There's so
good stuff and then so many little roads to go down. What are you thinking?
My mind goes to, where does this come from within you? What's that core? You know,
guess what?
Go ahead.
Today, what did I say today is?
Today,
one year. My mom, from day one, kids lived in our house. This is nothing to Steve Johnson. I only knew it. She loved to tell the story. Terry was on this side and Brent was on this side. And we were driving to practice when I was 10 years old. And she said, hey, Terry said, look back here, Miss Johnson. We look like an Oreo cookie.
Oh, my gosh.
And she told that story over. And Terry, who is my best friend still to the day today, who works for John T.
Oh, my goodness.
And it's just, you know, that's just all I knew. So it's nothing that what's in me. It's the same as if my dad was a carpenter and I was, you know, a carpenter.
Yeah.
It's just, why are you a carpenter? Because my dad, I didn't know any different. So it is, and that's what I love to say. This is nothing about Steve Johnson. This is just all that I know. And the best way to be blessed is to bless.
Oh, yes, yes, yes.
And these kids, especially Mike and then his best friend, Biggie. You'll meet Biggie in the video. And Biggie's like our son now and 25 and just doing so well. So I just didn't know anything else. Mm-hmm.
That speaks to the power of parenting.
It does.
Right?
Yeah. So mom living, you know, still is making the difference. Yeah. And just keeping it going.
That's amazing. That's amazing. And so much of what we do in our organization is working with parents who have children with mental health needs. And we have a particular focus on providing the parents support, but just managing, helping the parents learn to manage the situation versus just working with the child individually, because we know how powerful it can be. We also know that kids can have really hard experiences and it can be really hard for parents to figure out how to parent in those experiences and in those traumas and all those things. And much like I think probably what you described of the team that you're working with, they're bringing a lot of experiences from their background that are hard. but yet they're overcoming those circumstances.
Yeah, and I think about how you're part of that community that a lot of kids need. You know, we talk about, all right, what are your community supports looking like as far as providing that support on your mental health journey? Mm-hmm. And it's moments like these where it's another resource for us to be able to say, hey, this is a program out there. Mm-hmm. If this is the strength of you, that's all right, that you want to be a part of, or here's some success stories of how this can work and how it's possible to be able to be supported outside of just the family.
Yeah.
Because what we know is that it takes a village. Mm-hmm. It takes a village.
Mm-hmm.
I know that we've got a lot to be thankful for.
Yeah. So. Yeah, we talk a lot to our staff, and I've been talking to them since the pandemic, mm-hmm. about the importance of self-care as we all kind of experience together just the anxiety going through the pandemic. And we recognize self-care means a lot of different things to different people. But what we said to them over and over and over was, you have to make sure you're addressing your whole self. When you work on self-care, it has to be mental, physical, social, and spiritual. There has to be all those. If you don't have some self-care practices in all those domains, then you're not fully addressing your own needs. And so I guess one of the areas we dove a little bit into with our staff was spirituality, because we find that it's hard to talk about it in the mental health world, because we don't know what everyone believes. We somehow equate spirituality straight to like religious practices, but it's really not. It's really not that. It's and we've talked to our staff a lot about spirituality in terms of understanding yourself and your purpose. And for a lot of people, that purpose is given by God. And for other people, they see it as a purpose that they were designed for, you know, other reasons or ways they get about it. But obviously you think that purpose probably was driven by God's design for you. How does your spirituality and your mental health play together?
It's one and the same to me. I love that. I said earlier, you couldn't give me $1 million. I wouldn't be the Christian I am today had I not gone through. There was a lot of periods that I didn't know. God was all I had. Mm-hmm. You know, I didn't know I needed him until he was all I had.
Mm-hmm.
It'd be long drives, you know, work, because, you know, I'd be driving to Atlanta, and it would, for once, I figured out I didn't have to listen to a bunch of music and sometimes just a quiet time.
Been there.
So the spiritual part of it is, I'm so thankful, and I get so upset with myself when I look at these books. And it's been 7 days since I put something in it. And that broad thing is, that's because things were so good, you know? And so to go back to your question, Ricky, is how do those together? I truly, finally realized they're one and the same. I try to evaluate it as Father, Son, and the Holy Spirit.
Mm-hmm.
I see my personal spiritual. If even just on the way here, on that Alan Jackson said, you know, if you want to be a hunter, hang out with hunters. If you want to be a fisherman, you know, you need to hang out with fishermen.
Yeah.
But if you really want to learn to do those two things and you never hang out with them, you're not going to be with it. So if I want to be a Christian, you know, I need to find men. And that's where I think one of the reasons I'm here today is there's a Tuesday morning group that Mark McFerrin is a big part of. And we're every Tuesday morning.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just men. And it's nothing about Luke 3:19. It's in there talking about life.
Yeah.
And you talk about the spirit. And with that, I found that not only I've got to hang out with men like that, but then I can't just do that. I've got to go out and reach the ones that don't want to be a fisherman, but they really need to be. If they hang out with me long enough, I never knew I wanted to fish. Well, these people didn't realize they really wanted to have Christ as their first and their most important thing. And then they hang out with men that is their goal every day.
Mm-hmm.
So I tell everyone, and going back to the parents, I'm blessed to have gotten to work for my father for 5 years. And his motto was, if you put God first, family second, and job third, I'll have no problem with you. Matter of fact, you'll be my best employee because you have it. Well, I'm in a environment, there's a lot of people in our plants. We have, you know, 200 or 300 mm-hmm. men there that I feel very close to. And I'm not ashamed. I was when I was younger, it's like you couldn't put, kind of going back to how to do is sometimes businessmen feel like, gosh, I can't really, that's probably my toughest thing is how do you make it? I said, you know, when they see me, I don't want them to see me something at night when we go to dinner and we're out there at the bars and everything. And then, but they see me on Sundays. I want them to see Steve Johnson from Monday through Sunday mm-hmm. as the same Steve Johnson from 8 a.m. all the way back to 8 a.m., not the others.
Absolutely. And just for the readers, I'll mention two great books for people who struggle with anxiety that I have found to be extremely helpful. First is a Brené Brown book called The Gifts of Imperfection. It is so good. So it's like life-changing good if you really allow yourself to absorb the book. Uh-huh. The other one is for Christians. It's called The Sound of God's Applause, and it addresses fear of failure. And it's really good. One of my college professors wrote it.
Wow, what was his name?
I wish I could remember.
Okay. Sounds
of God's Applause.
Okay, good. I'll build upon.
Yeah. And, you know, it really just building on this idea, going back to what we were talking about earlier, can you be both brave and vulnerable? Mm-hmm. Yes. Can you be both insecure and full of pride? Yes. Mm-hmm. And that's a really hard, only people who have anxiety and fear of failure understand. Mm-hmm. To me, when I talk to people, they're the only ones who understand, yeah, I can have both pride and insecurity. That is just massive at the same time. It almost seems impossible, but they're
alive. I think that's why I have to describe myself as a recovering anxiety mm-hmm. or mm-hmm. depression. Because it's like an alcoholic. You know, they say, I'm a recovering. Well, I'm not ashamed, and I'm kind of grateful that I have that.
Yeah.
But I work at it every day. I mean, there's my dad, you know, he's 94. He's been so depressed the past. How could you not be? You've been married to someone for 69 years. Had I not gone through the depression that I did, I couldn't have helped him. And he and I talk daily. And one of the great statements that I've learned through mine that's helped him is it is. And you probably know this based on how much you'll help people, but it is proven. It is factual. You cannot be grateful and depressed at the same time. Mm-hmm. It's impossible. So I don't do this every day. So I wish I could sit there and say, so this is what I do. But I don't, but I know it. That every morning, if you'll list your top five things you're grateful for, it's literally impossible to be depressed. Mm-hmm. But again, that's why I'm a recovering depressed. Right. Because if I don't work at that, I will get there.
Yeah.
So
absolutely. I can relate to that. I'll give you the final question. Then I have a little like exercise for all three of us at the end where I'll have a surprise question. We'll all have to answer.
Of course.
Well, we ask people, you know, when they come on the podcast, how would you help someone else? So think about the individual out there that's listening and they are dealing with anxiety, dealing with depression, and trying to figure out, you know, what's the point of me telling my story? What's the point of me talking to someone else? What advice would you give that individual?
Wow, that is an awesome question. I'm glad you asked that. So what I would share with that individual is for too long, I didn't share that. And it kept growing. And I'll tell you, when you do share that, it's letting the air out of the balloon. Mm-hmm. And it's literally letting out, not popped. I love to share that example that when you keep going up and don't, the balloons get bigger and bigger and bigger, and then it will pop. Mm-hmm. And hopefully it will pop in a place that you're safe and somebody else can help you. But when you do let that story know and you reach out to someone, it's literally let that air out, and it's slowly, but man, it is all the weight off your shoulders. But it does take that first time, and it does take you that first time to say, it's okay. I'm a bar of yours. It's okay not to be okay. I love that. And until people know that, because too many people fake it until they make it.
Yeah.
And guess what? You're not going to make it if you only fake it.
Yeah.
So wow. That was a good question. Yeah. I love that. That's one in my book.
Awesome. All right. So we're being candid and we're talking about anxiety. Oh, and yeah. I don't know about you, but I relate to a lot of your story around just fear of failure and being anxious and leading to depression, all that kind of stuff. So here's the, we're going to be our vulnerable moment.
Okay. Here.
What are you anxious about right now and how are you managing it?
Wow.
Mm-hmm. You're next, Will.
Oh, I'm first.
You go.
Yeah, you can let him down there. I can think about it. And you're going to put me on the hot seat. Wow. So good. You know, I'm going to be with my dad this afternoon on the 1-year anniversary of my mom passing away.
Yeah.
So what am I? I mean, absolutely, I have so much. And one of the things I learned over the years in meeting with therapists and finding out is what hurts, what is what causes me the biggest pain and is when I have things stacked on top of each other. And I know that my limit, everybody has different limits. Mine's 4. Okay. So if I'm really anxious about something at work and then something's bothering me about my wife and I, or my daughter, something my daughter's going through, finances, or the big one as a male and over sales, and sales aren't great right now. If I don't take, I can't add that 5th one there. And, or I would not be able to help my dad. So it is so critical that this morning, it was a tough day at the office. A lot going on with a lot of different things because of supply chain.
Yeah.
And so meeting with my group this morning, I was able to take that off my plate. So that was one big one when I woke up and was going to the office. So being able to take that off. And then very, very honestly, the fact that I've been able to share with you all about I have a fear of failure, that's enabled me to take air out of that balloon. So now I'm going to be going to my father this afternoon, going to be a great listener and let him share, but it's only going to be him. So I can concentrate on that to where those other anxieties are put aside so that I can be the best that I can during probably the toughest day for my dad and myself in a year.
For sure. That's good. Thank you.
You know, I would say for me, as an agency, we're in Q4.
Okay.
So we're getting ready to close out the year, and there's a lot of anxiety around do we have everything ready to close? And are we ready, prepared to start a new fiscal year? I talked to staff Friday. We do a weekend wish and a Monday motivation. And what I mentioned to them was, throughout everything that's occurred over this month, the tragedies that we've heard about, we've seen, and how it's impacted us, how are we pouring into ourselves? That is very difficult for me to pour into myself when I'm the one used to pour. So the anxiety is sitting in. I'm recharging right now, and I'm having to trust that it's okay, letting go, delegating, and if I'm not recharged, we're not going to get off on the right foot at the beginning of this fiscal year. Mm-hmm. So as we're closing, I'm winding down and reassuring everybody that, hey, we're going to get through it. Everything's going to be okay. Praying all along. That's really where my charge is coming through. So that's where it's sitting right now.
Yeah. That's good. So for me, I have 2 daughters. One is currently off. Yeah, left yesterday to church camp.
Okay.
Summer camp for a week. And mamas don't like their babies to be away for 5 days. So it's a lot of anxiety.
Yeah.
And at the same time, little sister is graduating from elementary school tonight.
Wow.
And I'm not ready.
Oh.
I love elementary school. Elementary school is a bubble. I know all the teachers. My other daughter was there. We've been there for 9 years. I know the principal. We call each other. We text each other. They know me. I know them. They know my kid. They love my kid. And we are fixing to lose all of that to start middle school. And I'm not ready yet. So it's been, I really had to spend a lot of the day Sunday preparing for just mom stuff, which that's usually my easiest stuff, you know, like I enjoy all that and it's really fun. Whatever the kids have going on is awesome. And the hardest part of it is just coordinating in the schedule. But this feels a little like safety, security, all the things that I've been holding on to for 9 years, I'm losing with my little one moving up to middle school and my other one being, no cell phones, by the way, while she's at summer camp. So I can't even Life 360 her right now. It has to be completely off and it's in the adult's possession. So I'm praying through it every minute, every hour, praying that God uses this time when I'm anxious to really, you know, help pour into her life and show her her purpose and try not to be, if I'm anxious, they're anxious. So let's try to manage that. But I've just been a little bit of avoidance of my feelings until probably Sunday. And then I started like getting this real, here we go. I have to deal with this feeling. And I'm thinking, no, we're not going to do that. We're going to be okay today. We're going to be okay today. So yeah. You have to shift your mind. You have to shift your thoughts. You have to reframe every story. What's hard for me is good for my daughter. Mm. What's hard for me in moving schools is probably good for her growth and development long term. And just keep telling myself those positive things and not focusing on the negative. So it's, I think the reality is there's something for all of us to be anxious about on the daily and making a choice on how we manage that. And for some of us, we were just a little bit wired with a little extra anxiety, little monitor, but that's okay. We figure it out. It's good. So thank you for sharing your story.
Oh, thank you.
I really appreciate you.
Thank you so much. Thanks for the opportunity.
I do. And I appreciate our listeners today. If you need us, call us, teenvoices.org. Thank you.
Take care.
Thank you for joining us. If you enjoyed today's program, like, subscribe, and review this podcast. If you or someone you know is in need of mental health support services, log on to tnvoices.org or call 1-800-670-9882. Join us next time as we get candid.